Welcome back, ladies and gentlemen. Episode number 451 of the Mail Right Show. We're here with Ron Jones, and today we've got a very special treat for you because we're going to touch on a subject that a lot of you have been asking for, but we have not found the right person to have that conversation with. Today, we think we might have with Ron Jones. He is a property developer with a specialty in kind of like the fix and flip genre. So we're going to cover a lot of really cool subjects as it relates to that. For those of you that have an investment side of your business, this is definitely the podcast episode for you. Ron, you being the guest and John and I doing this every single week, and most of our listeners are return listeners, why don't we let you introduce yourself first?
Sure. My name's Ron Jones. I'm based in Huntington Beach, California. If you don't know where that is, it's about an hour south of Los Angeles. I've been flipping properties for about 15 years. I could give you some further background that I used to be a real estate appraiser for 20 years. And then 2008 happened and there was no more real estate appraiser industry. So I started using my skills as a market valuation expert to find opportunities to flip, basically buy, improve, and sell properties. In 2008, 2009, the market wasn't climbing enough to justify that type of model. So we were buying real estate notes throughout the country, basically buying them at discounts and solving the problems. But when the market started climbing, we started buying properties at foreclosure sales, started buying short sales, REOs. And then now we basically do speculation, which is go into a house, see how we could add value, either it being through remove or replace, make nice, or reconfiguring a floor plan, or solving a structural issue like cracked foundation or mold or something like that. And then we identify what we could sell it for, how much it's going to cost to get us to finish the product and sell for a profit.
Very cool. Well, you've had a lot of challenging years, but right now, if I was to guess and make a, just make a very broad stab, I would say you're going to be walking into a golden era for your business. So, because of the proliferation right now, amongst real estate agents, the chatter is almost exclusively about listings and how do we get in touch with people? How do we try to get existing homeowners that are not selling to sell? What's the mechanism to convince them? A improvement and getting out at top value is a very compelling discussion at this exact moment in time in history.
Yeah.
Before we get into that, though, or any of the questions that my fearless co-host, for those of you that don't know, this show was founded and created by an English bloke. His name is Jonathan Dinwood. And Ron, if you don't know, because you might not, John is a legend in the WordPress world, which is
I would use the word infamy, really.
Okay. So John is infamous in the WordPress world.
Is that good? Is that bad? Which is
I don't know. Some people, it's not very good, Ron, but others are okay with me. When you get to our age, Ron, part of you doesn't care anymore, do you?
Yeah.
All right. So John has established a show called WP Tonic, and it is absolutely one of the top three shows that talks about WordPress. He has had every guest that's relevant WordPress world pretty much on his show, including the guy that created WordPress in the first place. Mm. WordPress powers 22% of the websites on the web, just to give you an understanding. It is a massively dominant platform. So John has a huge amount of development, grassroots connections, and one of his side ventures is MailRight, which is a all-in-one platform for real estate agents. And that is how we got into doing this particular podcast. So with that wind up, John, why don't you say what I've left out and introduce yourself to somebody that may not have heard of you before?
Oh, I think you've done a fantastic job. I have to hire you to be my promoter. it's just a great platform, folks. You get a CRM, landing page, automatic email and text sending out functionality, built-in calendar, and a couple other things, all in one platform at a fantastic value price. We'd love you to go over to mail-right.com, have a look, and book a chat with me. We'd love you to become part of the family. Back over to you, Rob.
And Ron, I say this to you because it's easy to talk to a single person, but I'm really saying it to everybody. I am a very niche specialist, but I stand almost alone. I am probably one of the world's leading real estate, residential real estate SEO specialists in the entire United States. I have an agency that I've also founded. We do websites and SEO campaigns, but we've gone in a different direction. We focus on content and high quality answers to people's questions. And we take a long-term view, which when you talk about lead generation is not popular in residential real estate. But I too might be walking into a golden age because with all the challenges as it relates to the buyer side, more and more people are starting to scratch their chins and go, maybe a longer-term view is necessary. So let's dive right into this. So one of the questions, and I agree with John, it's always good to know the who, what, why, when, where of every guest that we have on the show. Mm-hmm. Property development, you gave us a small wind-up in the beginning of the show. You did tell us how you kind of got into it. Let me ask you a question. You get in front of somebody and you're talking about property development. How often do you actually leverage your 20 years of experience as an appraiser inside those conversations?
Inside the conversations that are social? Not much, because usually the recipient, the person I'm talking to, is not, you know, of that level. I'll talk to a real estate agent, but real estate agents and appraisers and investors think differently. Mm-hmm. So to answer the question of how much do I put my knowledge of valuation into a conversation, very little, but the component of valuation to the business model that I have is enormous. That was a huge advantage I had getting into it, because a lot of people struggled getting into flipping properties because one of the major components is really being able to be in tune with what you're going to be able to sell that property for when you go to put it online. I was an expert at it and it helped. That's not to say you could do it. It just gave me an advantage.
Give you an edge. So you leverage, you would, if I was actually asking about your business edge, you would specifically as it relates to business, you felt your 20 years gave you like a leg up.
An edge. Absolutely. So when I started going to foreclosure sales and buying properties there, I got approached by an associate, we'll call him that. I used to play basketball 20 years prior. And he calls me out of the blue and he says, I've been going to the foreclosure sales for a year and I haven't come up with any. You're getting them fairly regular. What are you doing different? And one of the biggest things is he really couldn't get a feel for what the exit value was. So he was bidding incorrectly. He wasn't putting his model together well. So I helped him with it. I helped him buy properties. And this guy who approached me had been a real estate expert his whole life, but he was in other facets of real estate. He wasn't in residential. So I had something he didn't have. And yet the fact that he was a real estate professional.
That's really fascinating. You, by the way, Ron, and I did some research on you, but I looked at your LinkedIn profile and I didn't really see, like, if you have a YouTube channel and such, like, I don't know that, but I'm going to tell you right away, your level of expertise in the market that we're in, if you are taking a pass on like making like evaluation statements on YouTube, you are missing a massive opportunity to promote yourself and become like a leading expert. This is such a hot topic right now. Right. And it requires really detailed, disciplined voices. I lived in Huntington Beach. I know where your home base is.
Right.
They're like, that is a tricky market. Everything on the shore is so expensive. You better have an incredibly good eye, because it would be easy to go underwater by a couple million if you pick the wrong property. So John, I've got the kind of a little bit of the who and why. Do you have anything you'd like to add or ask?
Yeah, I'll go on to questions. So Ron, what do you think are some of the biggest misconceptions that real estate agents have in working with you or approaching you or when they find you on your radar? There must be a couple that regularly come up. Do you like to share those with us, Ron?
Yeah, let me give you a long answer to that question, if you allow me.
Well, I normally do. Robert will get
it. So what the backstory to this, and I'm going to get to your answer, Jonathan, is that I am a teacher, and I got to becoming a teacher when the appraisal industry collapsed. I started investing in notes, as I mentioned, and flipping. And I kept my real estate appraisal license going by taking continuing education. And in so doing, the teacher who knew I wasn't appraising anymore says, well, what are you doing? And I said, oh, I'm buying real estate notes, which I was at the time. He said, oh, you know, have you considered teaching how to do that? And I go, oh, I'm not a teacher. I appreciate it. Thanks very much. And then 2 years later, I have to take more classes. And he says, what are you doing now? And I said, oh, I'm buying properties at foreclosure sales. He goes, tell me about it. I did. He goes, you need to teach this stuff. I said, thank you very much. It's not, I'm not a teacher. I appreciate you saying so. Then I wrote these newsletters on teaching real estate appraisers how to use their skills to invest and flip properties in real estate. And I sent them to him and he calls me up. He goes, you need to teach this stuff. So I said, okay, what are we talking about? So we got the class approved with the Department of Real Estate Appraisers in California. And I taught it for 10 years. So now I'm leading up to the answer to your question, Jonathan. So I was at a Christmas party for this continuing education school, and I was talking to the owner of the company. And he said, you know, if you were to develop a new class, what would it be? And I said, we need to teach real estate agents how to think like investors, because they, what they will do is they'll, I would be at a social or something, and I would, and they'd say, what do you do? And I say, I'm a real estate investor. And they'd say, oh, I wish I knew you. You know, 3 weeks ago, I had this property worth $500,000 that I could have gotten to you for $460,000. They're thinking that they would have gotten me, you know, $40,000 in equity, but they don't understand that that's not enough margin to make sense for us. So if they did understand how we think and what those margins are, they would be much more efficient at working with investors. And agents, when they become agents and they go work for Keller Williams or these agencies, the first thing that they tell you is go tell your cousin, go tell your uncle that you're a real estate agent. And when you look to buy or sell, please use me. Well, those are one-offs and that's fine. But if you work with a real estate investor like myself, I do 20 properties a year. When they bring me something that they understand I'm looking for, my next thing is great. Bring me another one. Bring me another one. Bring me another one. So if they efficiently were able to understand what we are looking for as investors and they bring us properties that fit that buy box, not only can they represent us on the acquisition, but then they can list the property when we sell it on the back end. So arguably two commission checks on one project, and you have a client that keeps wanting more and more and more properties.
Yeah, I get the impression that, you know, that because of your background, and you, Ron provided a very, it's one of the reasons that I thought he would be a good guest, Robert, because Ron provided a very detailed PDF that goes into the whole process in quite a lot of detail. I get the impression that you don't, like you said before you went live, that you don't deal with...
Gravel.
Yes, Ron. It's you deal with properties that are still, the structure's still there, but you're prepared to take on projects that other, let's use the term, I don't particularly like it, flippers wouldn't take on. Because of your background and your knowledge, you're prepared to take on, you know, more properties that might have more structural, bigger problems. Would I be correct about that?
That's one of the things. So think in terms of add value, Jonathan. So some kind of add value. So in California, if you don't know, the tenant laws are very challenging for landlords. And in so doing, we get a lot of opportunity that say, we will sell you this house, but you have to take the occupant and you have to deal with them. So a non-cooperative occupant. We're creating add value in that scenario by being able to take the problem away from the seller while obviously buying it at a price that makes economic sense for us. But we create some kind of add value. So either it being by making the house nice with a new kitchen, new bathroom, by taking on a house that has a non-cooperative occupant that we will deal with, by taking on a house with a cracked foundation, some kind of add value is what we target and measure what it's going to take to cure the issue versus what the profit margin is, and is it worth the risk taking it on?
Back over to you, Rob.
So guys, we're going to go to break about 30 seconds early because we have a great question coming up. And the question that we're going to ask, ladies and gentlemen, is what's a good deal and what isn't, which I feel is loaded and super broad. But I feel like a guy like you should have a couple of pat answers that you can probably deliver. And I know our audience, the ones that are interested in the subject, will definitely probably want to stay tuned. So with no further ado, we'll be right back. Stay with us.
Do you want quality leads from homeowners and buyers right in your own neighborhood? Then you need MailRite. It is a powerful but easy to use online marketing system that uses Facebook to generate real estate leads at a fraction of the cost you'd pay from our competition. We stand behind our work with a no question asked 30-day money back guarantee. So don't delay. Get started today. Go to mail-write.com.
Welcome back, ladies and gentlemen. We've just come back from break. It's episode number 451. We're here with Ron Jones, who's unquestionably a property valuation expert. He's got a lot of other things that he focuses on beyond that, but that is where his history is. And right now we are going to ask him a question that directly relates to his history, which is, if I was looking at a property and I'm trying to figure out, let's just put this in the foot shoes of an actual realtor who's going out with a client to show them a property. And so I'm going to use your analogy about learning. So let's say they walk into this property and the client, the person who's viewing the home, turns to the realtor and says, is this a good deal or not? All right. What is a good deal or not?
It's going to be comparable driven. Well, the first thing any agent would say if their client asked them that, they would say, is it good for you? Does this fit your desires? Are the finishes satisfactory? Is the garage satisfactory? Whatever. You're asking me as an investor, what we do is, one, we never want to be the most expensive house in a neighborhood. So we size up a neighborhood and say, okay, where are we? Are we going to fit in this area to be a good, attractive, desirable house? So my quick answer to that, Robert, is comparables. You'd measure it against other comps, but you're never going to get, especially in Southern California, you're never going to get every house to be exactly the same. So the desirabilities of the typical buyer changes, but we try and capture what is be either a friendly floor plan, a view, a big yard with space. It depends on the neighborhood. So I'm giving you a very broad answer because it is varies by neighborhood and varies by buyer and it varies by demographic and it varies on a number of levels. But it really is, we size up what is the hottest selling house in the neighborhood. What is it about that house that made it the hottest selling house? And how do we capture those virtues of that house?
So let me give you an example, because I think I understand an application of this question. I live in a very small house in Van Nuys, California, which mm-hmm. you probably are familiar with Van Nuys because you're living in Huntington. Okay. Yeah. But the owner of this property, who's an immigrant, has taken incredibly good care of the property, installed a pool, he installed a jacuzzi. Mm-hmm. He's actually done the paint many more times than my neighbors. The home next to me listed at $890. And I felt like if I was able to offer $890 to the owner and buy the home at $890, that I'd be getting a great deal because okay. the house feels like it should be worth 10 or 20% more than anything else in the neighborhood. Okay. Is that a reasonable explanation for what you're saying?
Well, it sounds like what you keyed on is that you feel it's a good buy. And that's really what it boils down to, because you might feel it's a good buy, but Jonathan might think that's not a good buy. So it kind of boils down to, it's like walking into a clothing store and say, I really like that shirt. Oh, that shirt's ugly. I like that shirt. It's really what, you know, your desirabilities are and what your needs are and what your what satisfies your buy box. But it really is comp driven. If you're looking for, if it's just the thing about single family residences is that they sell on emotion. That's a very big thing. So we try and capture emotion with a really sexy kitchen, sexy bathroom, whatever. When you start getting into apartment buildings or commercial properties, those are numbers. You just look at the balance sheet. You almost don't even have to look at the building. You just look at the balance sheet or the rent roll or what have you. Single family residents sell on emotion. And if they're going to sell on emotion, everybody's emotional triggers are going to vary. So you try and capture what the most desirable of that neighborhood is, but you're not going to appeal to every single person. So you try and check all the boxes the best you can, but you're not going to check everyone's boxes.
Got you. All right, John, why don't you take number four?
Yeah, I don't know if you look at properties nationally or if it's just in the Western states. If it's national, like this take Florida now, because, you know, of the terrible hurricanes they've recently had. But I think my impression of the Florida housing market statewide, it looks to be getting really ugly really quickly. And there seems to be various elements linked to that statement I've just made. So, first of all, do you deal with properties nationally? And how does that affect you, like a Pacific state like Florida, and how do you see the market going in the next year or 18 months? That's kind of, I thought, because they're all intertwined, the things I've just asked you, in a way. Mm-hmm. You've got kind of regional differences, mm-hmm. and then you've got a national outlook. What's your thoughts, Ron?
So I don't know anything about Florida, Jonathan, but I have recently bought houses at a state in Indiana, South Bend, outside of a University of Notre Dame, for rentals, just building a rental portfolio there. I can't speak specifically to Florida, but if you're asking me what my opinion is going forward of the housing market, I'm bullish on it. I'm bullish on it in California because I have my ear to the ground in California. But insofar as its traces, you know, it's just softened. They're not getting the response in California to the lowering of the interest rates as much as I thought they were going to, because I think it's because election's coming up and people are in a holding pattern. But I think I'm pretty confident the Fed's going to lower the rates again in December. And then when we go into the housing market or go into the buying season, which is what, end of January to probably end of April, I think we're going to see a flourish. Again, that's mostly California. I can't speak to Florida. If you want me to, but real quickly, I'd like to talk about the South Bend properties. We are buying out of state to buy rentals that cash flow, and we're buying in areas that have a constant rental demand, like outside a university, like the University of Notre Dame. And it's they're very appealing. So I buy a house for $100,000 and I put 25% down, and I could get close to $1,500 a month rent. The cap rate on that's like 11%. And there's a constant demand for housing because of something as positive as the University of Notre Dame. So I hope I answered your question. I can't speak specifically about Florida, but I am bullish about the housing market moving forward. And we do look for rentals in areas that have constant demand for rental properties.
I'm just going to add a little addition. It's a tough question because you pointed this out, Ron, and I agree with you. I have one of my monikers of success, one of the ways I built my reputation, is I've already had three conversations with realtors today. I have them every single day, one-to-one, person-to-person, just like this meeting. And I hear a lot of boots on the ground information. I'm probably one of the only CEO and founders that still talks to individual realtors one at a time on a regular basis. And I've been doing it a long time. And what I've definitely noticed is that real estate conditions are really regional and local. Like, I agree with you with what you just said about California. And if you start pointing out certain cities in California, I think that the circumstance changes place to place. Like, you go to Beverly Hills, they're getting regulated into the ground, taxed into the ground, and more people are moving than not. Has Beverly Hills itself changed in terms of lifestyle or quality? Not really, but all these external things have definitely impacted the market, and people with wealth are starting to go, it's not worth it anymore.
Agreed.
So the next question, which I'm going to take, is what are the... Oh, wait. No, sorry. I was looking at the wrong question. This is an interesting one. Do you see... And John put down AI, and I've got the... I'm like really prickly. Large language models is not yet autonomous intelligence. So I'm going to go... Do you see behavioral intelligence or large language models currently changing what you do? And it's in some way, anyway, do you see it impacting your part of the real estate world?
Yes. And I'm glad you brought that up. I just finished reading a book called Co-Intelligence about AI and large language models. So if you would have said large language models a month ago, I wouldn't have any idea what you were talking about. Large language models is the premise of AI. Mm-hmm. I do. And so one of the things we do is we try and get a crystal ball by I have virtual assistants that contact real estate properties that are in escrow. They haven't closed yet. Once they close, they become public records and everybody knows what it's sold for. We get to the agent before it closes to find out what it's going to close for, seller concessions, things like that. I'm confident that we could develop a model using AI to do that. Either calling directly or finding out other ways of doing it. Another thing is that we track zip codes, and in those zip codes, we could design an AI to go into a zip code and see the volume. What is selling? Is it two bedrooms? Is it three bedrooms? How much above or below asking? We could put in formulas that could totally tell us what trends are happening before anybody else sees those trends. So I definitely see a place for AI in that. I'm not smart enough to develop that yet, but it's definitely, someone's doing it as we speak. I guarantee it.
Huh. John, I find that answer fascinating. John, do you have something to add?
No, I haven't. I think that was quite insightful. So I'll go on to the last question. So if you had your own time machine, Ron, and you could go back to the start of your real estate developing career, is there one or two things you love to have been informed of that you know now that you didn't know then?
No doubt he did. Okay, I'll answer that second one because I was on the questionnaire and I was thinking about that going, that's a great question. You know, what would I do? So one of the things is way back when in the early 2000s, I started buying as many rentals as I can. And if you guys recall, the early 2000s, private properties were going up in value like crazy. So I was locking them in as fast as possible. And because the lending was so loose, I was able to do stated income loans and buy as many as I could. And I got up to 17 rentals. And over time, just for various reasons, either having partners that wanted to get out or what have you, I've sold many of them. I still have some, but I sold ones that I really wish I never sold. So I knew when I started doing it, the premise of never selling real estate, always holding real estate. And I went against what I knew not to do. And I regret that. So one of my answers is that I really wish I didn't sell those properties. I wish I would have fought some of my partners and said, no, we're keeping the damn things, what have you. So to your audience, if you buy real estate and you own real estate, keep it as long as you can, because real estate is a given. When you talk to our grandparents, they'll say, I bought this house for $77,000 and today's it's worth 1.4. I guarantee you guys, 20 years from now, somebody's going to come back and say, I bought that house for $1 million 20 years ago. And look at it now. It's $5 million. It's going to happen. And so the great thing about real estate is that you can leverage your acquisition. You can buy it for a percentage down, call it 10%, maybe 20%. And you own that whole entity. You own the whole the real estate. So if you buy something, just to use simple numbers, for $100,000 with 10% down, $10,000, and it goes up $10,000, you just made 100% return on your money. This is how a lot of people make money. So my answer in going back in the time machine was, I wish I would have held true to never selling real estate. Always keep it and try and get as much as you can in your portfolio.
So I'm going to ask a follow-up question. It's going to cause you a great deal of pain, and I apologize in advance, but I really want your point that you just made to sink in for the entire audience.
Okay.
If you hadn't sold, have you ever just taken a glance at the numbers and gone, I would be this much wealthier if I hadn't sold? Can you give us a ball?
You're right. That is painful. you did hit a nerve. I did, Robert. And I am, So I really tried to lead life to look forward and not back. You learn from the past. You don't, it shouldn't define you. So I definitely feel that we're all on the path we belong on. But yes, to answer your question, I have. And yes, my net worth would be significantly higher. And
how about a percentage? Without giving us any numbers, how about you just put a percentage to it?
On how much more?
Would it be worth 30% more, 40% more, 50% more?
I would say 200 to 300% more. Yeah.
Okay.
Because I was up to 17 properties. Keep in mind, guys, let me give you some just of the numbers. I bought a house in Rancho Cucamonga for $200,000 that I sold it for $400,000. I'm going off of memory here. That's worth probably $1 million today. Multiply that times 17. And that's about what it is. Yeah.
Okay.
And they all cash flowed. That's another thing I kicked in myself. It's not like I was writing a check every month. I wasn't. I was still making money. Just for various reasons, like, oh, okay, I could get out from underneath this one, you know, da da da. And it was a mistake. And I regret it. But again, no regrets, just look forward.
No, and I agree with you 1,000%, and everything is not the zeros. But for the people listening to the show, I wanted to make sure that they had some kind of financial tune in to what that would mean. And in this particular case, let's even take a number off that. Let's just say 200%. Yeah. You'd be worth whatever the number is, you'd be worth 200% more, which would mean you'd have 200% more options to do whatever it is you want to do. You know, as a business owner, I always have ideas for other businesses and I want to reinvest in this business. And of course, I wish I had whatever, $10 million extra dollars to do it. I wish, and I didn't have to call a bank or whatever the story is. Anyway.
Yep.
All right. So we're into bonus time. Do you have 5 extra minutes to give us?
Of course.
Okay. So I have a different kind of question for you. Let's just pretend that your business was John and I's, which is our business is marketing. Mm-hmm. We market, we help people market mm-hmm. themselves. You have your skill set. Mm-hmm. If you had a piece of advice to help a realtor get marketing value out of mm-hmm. your skill set, do you think you could come up with something? Like, how would you apply what you do and maybe try to provide value to people that don't know the realtor? Like, how would you do that?
You mean education? You mean to?
Yeah, sure. What would you learn? What would you tell them to learn? How would you do? Like, what would you say?
Oh, okay. So if you're a real estate agent and you were let's back. So I have an ebook. I think I may have mentioned it to you guys. I have an ebook, and the ebook I think it was in the questionnaire. So I have an ebook. Okay. And it's called Think Like an Investor, Double Your Income. And it's specifically for real estate agents to understand, just like I was speaking earlier, what it is, how we think. And it's a quick read. I did that on purpose. It's only like 33 pages, but it's very, very impactful. And I would highly recommend it. I'll give you my email address and anybody can reach out. It's free. But if an agent got one nugget out of that thing and it was inspired on one level to go out and find a real estate investor, which in the book, it tells you where to find them, then it's a win. So the whole book gives you that how we look at ROI, which is return on investment, how we reconfigure floor plans, if we were to do a buy and hold, what is it we're looking for to buy and hold? What kind of margins do we need to see? Everything we're talking about, how I ended up on your podcast was me saying, you know, that real estate agents don't really understand how investors think. And if they did, they would work so much more efficiently and make more money and honestly work less. This book will help get you there. It will inspire you. I chose not to write a 200-page book because a 200-page book tends to sit on people's shelves and they never get to it. This is a book you can literally read in 1 to 2 sit downs, and it will highly likely inspire you to find intelligent real estate investors to work with and make more money and work a lot less.
Let me ask you a question. I'm going to save it. If you would stay for about 60 seconds after the show is over, I have a question for you that we don't need to do on air.
Oh, okay.
John, I think that was a great answer. I hope that people do go out and check your book. If they did want to find the book, where would they find it?
They could email me directly, Ron Jones, RONJONES, mm-hmm. at PWNE, that's Peter Walter Nancy Eric, capital, CAPITAL, PWNE Capital.com. And PWNE Capital is my company, just to explain that.
Okay.
So Ron Jones at PWNEcapital.com. Email me. I'll send it for free. And all I ask is if you ask for it, just read it and give me feedback as saying, yes, I like it. No, I don't. And any critiques you might have of it.
we're wrapping up the show now, everybody. So is that also the unless John has something else to add, but is that also the contact information that you'd like used if somebody was to reach out to you for an inquiry or to try to hire you as a consultant, anything?
Really? Yes. So I have Instagram, which is Ron Jones Flips Homes. Mm-hmm. And I think it is, if you may excuse me for a second, because I think we might have changed it, but I'll check it real quick. Ron underscore PWNE underscore capital. So if you put Ron Jones into Instagram, you'll find me. I'm not very active on LinkedIn, and my website is PWNE Capital.
Okay. John, is there anything you want to add? Or if you don't have anything to add, why don't you tell us, everybody listening to the show, how they could reach out and ask you some questions about WordPress or your areas of specialty, the MailRight system for realtors, any of that stuff?
Yeah, thanks, Rob. I just want to say that we get a lot of property developers approach the show, but I was really impressed with Ron's PDF, and I will attempt to have it in the show notes so you'll be able to download it, and I will have Ron's email contact details in the show notes. But also, I think Ron has really clearly shown his knowledge and experience in this episode, Robert. That's about all I've got to say, Robert. Back over to you.
And if anybody should like to mention me or get in touch with me, I'm at inboundrm.com. You can go to my services page, go to my about page, and you'll have many different ways to contact me. I've got YouTube. I've got all the channels. So find me in any of them. Just search for Inbound REM. But mostly we educate realtors in marketing. This has been highly educational, Ron. I am deeply grateful that John decided to. John handles all the mechanics of the show. I just come on and do the hosting bit. Something like that. So we're
Jonathan disagrees.
No, we don't. We get on each other about this all the time. Anyway. He's the one who handled the PDF. I didn't see it. I didn't read it.
It was attached to the email, Rob.
I'm gonna read it now. All right. Anyway, ladies and gentlemen, boys and girls, thank you so much for tuning in. I hope you've enjoyed the show as much as John and I have had this time. And we'll see you next time, or hear you next time. All right.
Thank you, guys.